Hello, I'm Joe Quirk. I talk to Seasteaders and their supporters. What happens when the world's most famous astronaut meets the world's most famous aquanaut on National Geographic TV? Do they make common cause and grasp hands and decide to propel humanity into the future together? Well, no, actually. What actually happens is they nearly get into a fist fight. Bob Ballard is a rock star oceanographer. He discovered the Titanic and the Bismarck, and he was among the first to witness life at the ocean vents, the first life ever discovered that did not rely upon energy from the sun. The primary reason people care about the oceans is because of Bob Ballard's colossal educational juggernaut, the Jason Project, which converted the world. Right now, you can go online and watch live as the Nautilus explores the deep ocean. Bob Ballard has a long and storied career, and he says his final task is to colonize the ocean. And here is how he concluded his TED talk, seen by over 1 million people.
And my final question, why are we not looking at moving out onto the sea? Why do we have programs to build a habitation on Mars, and we have programs to look at colonizing the moon, but we do not have a program looking at how we colonize our own planet, and the technology is at hand? Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Every 2 years or so, Bob gets us on the phone and tells us how we should go about colonizing the ocean. Bob was thinking about how to do this since before the Seasteading Institute was founded, and he thinks the key ocean technology is the FLIP, a technology that has been floating on the ocean since 1962. The FLIP is a vertical spar described as being as stable as a fence post in 40-foot waves. Bob says this is the technology for seasteads. The only challenge is we need to drop the cost to something an average middle-class American family can afford. So my colleague Chris Mulia has a plan for that. Chris has 15 years of experience at sea as a mariner. He's started and exited several successful startups, and he had to ask himself, why haven't seasteads been built yet, since the technology already exists? The answer is that the materials are too expensive. So he contemplated how to make them cheap. And he says the answer is the ascendant technology of 3D printing. So the Seasteading Institute served as incubator for Chris Mulia's business model for 3D printed seasteads. I introduced Chris to the world's foremost oceanographer and turned on the recorder, and you get to listen in on this conversation. But first, let's hear about Bob Ballard's confrontation with Buzz Aldrin.
There's no way in hell we're going to move the population of the planet to Mars. I consider all of that a false prophecy. It just defies all the laws of physics. And yet, they keep perpetrating that we're going to colonize outer space when we can't find anything remotely close to what we have here now. Mm-hmm. And even when you look at the Earth, 95% of the population of the planet lives on 5% of the planet. And of the 40% or 28% that's above water, 40% of that's uninhabitable because it's deserts or polar regions. And we know that people live close, 60% of the world population live within a few miles of the ocean, and the ocean's rising is going to claim a lot of that real estate. So I don't see that there's any real option for the human race but to move out onto the ocean. I was doing a show with National Geographic, which was a five-part TV series a couple of years ago called Alien Deep. And one of the shows dealt with interspace versus outer space, where I really took off the gloves and told, the astronauts that going to the moon and going to Mars and populating was a crock of shit, and that it was just absolutely ridiculous concept. And Buzz Aldrin, you know, who's not the nicest guy in the world to begin with, you know, he yelled and screamed, wanted to do a fist fight with me because he likes to get in fist fights, evidently. And
yeah, he socked somebody once.
He's not a nice guy, actually. I've had enough encounters with him. He's not a very nice guy. But he's all off on this evangelistic concept of taking people to Mars. Well, who gets to go? You know, are you gonna only select white guys? I mean, who gets to go? And you know, it's a failed concept. And why do you want to go to Mars when you got Earth? So I've been, you know, shooting my mouth off a lot. My initial concern about seasteaders was they were building the cities first when you need to build the farms first, and then you build the cities because the farmers need them. You know, it's sort of like, you know, the Oklahoma land rush. It wasn't people going out to build Oklahoma City. It was people in covered wagons going out to get a piece of America and be independent and have a farm. So we needed to look at, we need to get the farmers out there and the ranchers so that there's a viable income, viable way of making a living. And then the cities will follow because they'll need, you know, where do I, you know, who's got, you know, tons and tons of soybean? Where do I go to market? How do I move my products? And so it was trying to capture the imagination of the public, which I've done a lot of, and I sort of understand it to some degree. And the reason I picked Catalina is because I wanted to be right off Los Angeles. I wanted to be right where, you know, you would draw attention. But I want to be very careful about it to bring in what I would call it responsible environmentalists. The people that aren't just, you know, we want all humans to go away except me because I want to appreciate Mother Nature, but I don't want to share it with any other human beings, which is sort of the radical end of environmentalism, get rid of all humans but the environmentalists, to get really people that are responsible and realize that there are ways to not turn the entire ocean into a national park. And I've worked hard by helping to be a founder of the National Marine Sanctuary Foundation, where I believe in the Yellowstone Parks and the Yosemites of the underwater world, firm believer in it, but you don't take the whole damn 72% of the planet and make it a park. So it's trying to be getting responsible people. I've started talking to who I've been thinking about creating a yet another foundation. I've talked to some preliminary people that I would pull on the board that have deep respect within the community and knowing the gauntlet we're going to have to run. I mean, there are going to be people who want to kill us. And the question is, how do we anticipate all of that and try to deal with most of it before we ever go public so we're not learning on the job in front of the world?
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the New York Times four-part piece, hit piece on the oceans.
Well, I've been reading different parts of it, yeah.
Yeah. So, and they're just calling for more state control of the oceans.
Yeah. They want to, exactly. And this is, you got to be aware of that. But I think there's ways of being smart about it. And we have to be smart about it. We have to not lose our cool when these people make these ridiculous statements. But what I wanted to do was an experiment. I was more initially thinking of capturing the public's attention of a family living at sea. So it was going to be more, and I have a lot of relationships with National Geographic, and I have friends that have done a lot of reality television, which some of it's just absolutely gagged me with a spoon. But how could you create a high-profile project about living at sea, a family? I mean, there are other things you could do that are less objectionable initially. I mean, you've got the entire length of the ship is a growing surface, the part that's beneath the water, which you could do, you know, mollusks. You could do a lot of other non-objectionable species. But I just haven't, you know, had the time, if you want to know the truth. I know lots of corporation heavyweights. I have lots of billionaire friends I belong to the Bohemian Club, which is nothing but an unbelievable concentration of billionaires based in San Francisco. I'm not really, I don't see the technical problem that we're going to run into. I see it, though, as how do you make it extremely efficient, solar collection, wind. I mean, there's a lot of experiments that you could do with flip because it exists and it's not doing nothing. And it can easily be towed up from San Diego. You could do the whole thing off San Diego. There's nothing sacred about doing it off Catalina other than I wanted the protection of the island. But I wanted to get out in federal water, not in state water, because you run into amazing amount of crap in California state waters, but you can pretty easy to be just outside state waters. But the public doesn't understand is most of the ocean's a desert. And then you you drop sink a ship, and all of a sudden you got a reef. And there's a lot of research been shown that it's see, I think the key thing, there's all these different strategies you want to have is, you know, I was born in Wichita, Kansas, where all oceanographers come from. And I was saying, well, take an acre of prairie grass. Back in the old days, before we settled Kansas, when it was just prairie, how many acres of prairie grass to support one buffalo head? 12. The ratio is you need 12 acres of prairie grass to support one buffalo, and that's why they roamed all over hell, because they quickly ate where they were. Well, what happened when they took that acre of prairie grass and planted corn? How many heads of cattle does 1 acre support? A lot. So that it's not. It's, I think the concept we have to get into people's minds is we're going to increase the productivity of the ocean. Instead of raping it and denuding it, we're going to increase its productivity. And when people can get their head around, well, look at the productivity of an acre of wheat and corn feeding the world versus feeding them prairie grass. And so we want to move away from feeding them prairie grass by going out and increasing the productivity of the world's oceans. So there's a lot of agendas that, and you can develop strong, strong scientific basis for it. You want to do it in a nonprofit environment. You want to engage the oceanographic community, you know, which I live in. I know how to engage them, and they do respond to logic. So it's a question of looking at this experiment. It's a script ship. It's a Navy nonprofit going out to look at how do we look at living there. I mean, NASA will probably put money in it because they're talking about making people, you know, isolating them or whatever.
So, Bob, what do your Bohemian billionaires think of this idea?
Some of them, the ones I thought of, they think it's wild because they know I'm crazy. But I've delivered on my crazies. And so they say, do you believe in it? I said, yeah, well, then I believe in it. It's more going in and not blinking, you know, and saying, I believe in this. And they go, well, you know, I've been a visionary because I'm dyslexic. Read the dyslexic advantage. We are visionary.
Yeah.
And we're early adopters. And have you read the book Dyslexic Advantage?
I have lots of dyslexia in my family.
Just came out. You want to read it. I cried. It felt like I was reading my autobiography. I knew I was weird, but I didn't know why. And this book explained it in spades. But, I mean, there's a lot of dyslexics out there that I know. Ted Turner, Richard Branson, they're all dyslexic.
And they're
all the kind of people that you go to because they are crazy, too.
And speaking of crazy, Chris, can you tell us about your vision for how we would get these flips going?
Sure. I've been called crazy for this by more than one person in the past couple of months. But, Bob, what I'm looking at is in thinking in the near and distant future is what a rational pathway to get there would be, and rational in the sense of who would invest in this. How does technology adapt to the market and the market adapt to technology? And one of my stumbling points is the cost of building platforms for a single family or a small group or whatever it might be, and how that is financed and funded, and how you make it. Was Peter Thiel that said, if we start building these things, we have to build them by the hundreds. And I think he's right. But to do that, if we go the typical way of naval architect, detailed engineer, shipyard, what we've done is we've purchased some sort of floating structure, whether it's flip or whatever it might be. And I think you're right that flip is the key. But what we've done is we've paid an enormous amount for this to a relatively uninnovative industry. You have most of the innovation in the naval architecture side, very little on the shipyard side, I think, and you've paid full retail, so you haven't built any capability. And I think the key for an investor is he doesn't want to buy a vessel or a structure. He wants to buy the capability so that he amortizes his investment. For each vessel that you build, you know, your cost of or your investment is spread out over all of those vessels. And the technology that is coming to the forefront is to do this is construction scale 3D printing.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Whatever
ONR is funding,
yeah,
pioneering a lot of that.
Okay, I've spent the past 8 weeks looking at the 13 or so groups in the world that are seriously investigating this and that actually are doing it, and it ranges from USC to the Swiss Institute of Technology, MIT, and so on.
Oak Ridge in that list?
Who is?
Oak Ridge?
Yes.
Because
yes.
Oak Ridge is where ONR has been investing a lot, and we're looking at them for pumping out really inexpensive manipulators. Yeah, Oak Ridge is lab. But ONR is big on this, and they're a player.
Well,
they are a player in this.
I think it's a transformative industry.
I talked to
I think what you'd ultimately be able to do, depending on which material you start with and so on, but I think you're going to be able to start building vessels for a third of the cost that you can do it now.
Yeah.
You eliminate waste, you eliminate time. It's true that you're eliminating a lot of labor and things like that, but by doing and that there's a social cost to that, but there's also a social positive to it. But you also eliminate the mistakes that labor creates in a shipyard, which is every time labor makes a mistake, it costs five times more than the original installation. So it's really easy to see how something that is designed digitally that can be translated into the physical world, whether it's through concrete or sintered steel or aluminum or whatever material it might be, becomes very inexpensive very quickly, and you can build them so rapidly. So what I've been doing is working on a business model to do exactly that, to start with the capabilities that we have now, working with materials like Julia Greer down at Caltech is doing some amazing thing with materials. The Swiss Institute of Technology has got it all wrapped up. They're working both materials, amazing robotics, and the actual physical structures, they're creating stuff now.
And I'm working with Jet Propulsion Lab, Kevin Hand, and that whole crowd on grippers, you know, using the, it's called gecko grippers, the whole concept of how does a gecko climb up glass.
There you go.
Yeah, they're a great crowd of people. They are expensive.
It's amazing how quickly it's advancing. But I think what we can do is put the right group of people in a room right now. We can put the right group of people in a room, and within 12 months, we'd be able to start building structures, and these would be floating structures. In my business model, I'm starting small. I'm looking at basically starting with Portland Cement based concrete, because it's simple and it's a lot of what these guys are working with right now. Creating barges for like floating offices, you know, one-story offices like they have in Helsinki, and looking at early adopter cities so that we create some cash flow and we start supporting ourselves.
Yeah, what
and
you need
as
to do is start building barges in New Orleans instead of houses, so they just simply float.
Yeah, that's, I you know, houses aren't they're a part of the business model. But you're right. You know, we can build for industry and so on. And I think the key is to keep the technology inside rather than trying to sell this printer idea to a contractor, because then you just open yourself up to, you know, if something goes wrong, you're deep into claims and so on. But building them ourselves is the best way to create cash flow. And as the capability expands, and it expands, it doubles about every year. The speed increases, the resolution of the printer head increases, the agility of the robots. Every year that basically doubles. As that capability expands, we can create more ambitious projects, whether it's a flip or it's, you know, these sea scraper ideas. There's so many different ideas. I think flip is the, I think that's the Model T of getting alpha fee.
I know, it was built in 1968.
Right. I had a field trip to it when I was 10 years old at Scripps. And it's always been one of my favorite vessels. But
well, I just think I grew up in San Diego. And,
so did I.
But yeah, you know, I agree. I mean, it's just let's get going. I don't think we're going to have any problem being successful, but overcoming inertia of rest and getting something going, I think it'll catch on. I can't wait to be selling it, but there needs to be a team that can cover all the different bases that need to be covered. When I was visiting the Jet Propulsion Lab, we were planning a 2020 launch to Europa to look for hydrothermal vents, and John Culberson, who controls CJS in the House, he's the chairman of the House Appropriations, which is the one that counts in Commerce, Justice, and Science. And I walked him through it, and he says, "How much do you want?" And I said, "I'd like to have a pilot program at $5 million." He said, "All right, let's do it." It's all about being able to take what we care about, but packaging it where everyone cares about it. And that is when you bring in the next generation of explorers and engineers and scientists, and how you're going to use this program to excite them to study harder in school. The money flows unbelievable.
Bob, when you were talking about having the team, the people together get it started, I'm looking at creating a for-profit entity to create these structures and do it in a way that's much cheaper, much more accessible, that will get them out there as quickly as possible.
They can be a strategic partner, but it's
I'd love to do that.
I would nonprofit wing, because in the proof of concept phase, the money, it's, you know, I can see getting that money pretty quick.
Okay, I think that we can also raise money from purely the commercial side. But part of my values in putting this together is I want it to be, I want an oceanographic team on there. I want the physical oceanographer on my team. I want a marine biologist, and I'd like to look to you to advise me on how best to do that when it becomes appropriate, if I could.
I know of some really cool people who would bring a lot to the table. Kumar Dehavanan, who used to run Moat Marine Labs.
Okay.
I've already started thinking about making a trust around this and been thinking about potential board members for the trust that are really sharp people. I don't know if you know much about Moat Marine Lab, but he also did a big aquaculture program there. I know the community rather well,
mm-hmm.
and I know who the visionaries are and who the deadheads are. But, yeah, I could, you know, we need to keep this conversation going.
So you'd be open to perhaps a visit or something like that? I'd like to make a case to you about and go into the details about what I'm doing. And
do
the
you
idea
want to come out to our Interspace Center?
What's that?
I'd love to show you the Interspace Center.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. Is it in Rhode Island?
Rhode Island.
Okay. I'd love to see it.
And it's where our whole operation, because we have a huge satellite network linked to the ships, and we're adding more and more ships to the Interspace Center. And a lot of this is going to be, you want to bring that all into play, because you want to reach the world. You want to do this live, because the educational component would be your main. You would really be able to. I can send you our social networking. We reach 70 million people through our social networking, and in fact, we're just finishing the season now. We're running the numbers, but it's. I'd like you to physically see our plant, because it's what's the hub for all of our telecommunications, which is critical.
Okay.
Before there was the Oklahoma land rush, there was the Lewis and Clark expedition, and so we're out there exploring the future places people are going to live.
If you're interested in learning more, go to seasteading.org. Check out our floating city project and let us know what you would need to move to the first floating city. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. I'd like to thank Alexander Cosma for helping me produce this podcast. And thanks to all our donors and our huge community of volunteers.